With that, good morning, everyone. This is the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is September 22nd at about 9:30 in the morning. We're in the state capitol, and this is the time and place that was noticed for this meeting. We have a relatively light agenda today, but before we get into our regulatory work, we do want to recognize two employees for their service to the state. First, we have Anissa, who serves her office very well and is actually completing her 10th year of service to the state of South Dakota, and in a couple of different offices that I know of, and has always received very high marks any place she's gone. And so we have a 10-year pin for Anissa. Then secondly, we have a 20-year pin, and of course you don't get an opportunity to hand these out every day. This is for John Smith, who spent a number of years with DNR as a division director and eventually a department secretary, and has served the commission well as general counsel for a few years. John, here's your 20-year pin. John will be disappointed to learn that you can't get any money for that on those cash for gold programs. With that, we'll proceed to, I should mention, I'm Dusty Johnson. My colleagues, Commissioner Steve Colbeck and Gary Hansen, are present today. So with that, we'll move to approval of the minutes of the commission meetings held on June 9th and July 29th. Those minutes have been circulated. Are there any amendments or corrections? Hearing none, any action?
Move for approval.
Motion has been made. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. That will get an update on the Consumer Division for Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 113 contacts since the last report was prepared for the September 8th, 2009 Commission meeting. 46 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 22 of the contacts involved electric service, 8 contacts involved natural gas service, 7 contacts involved cell phone service, 13 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, 2 contacts involved the Keystone Pipeline, and 3 contacts regarding wind energy, and 2 contacts involved the Grain Warehouse Division, and 10 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,767 of the 1,826 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved.
Thank you, Ms. Gregg. Any questions? All right, with that, I thought we would, we always make telecom wait to the end, but perhaps we'd take up those items first, if that's acceptable to my colleagues. With that, telecom item number one, just to ask the commission to approve a resale agreement between Quest Corporation and Easton Telecom Services. I don't see anyone from Quest or Easton present, so we'll turn to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Semler for staff. Staff recommends that the agreement be denied. The commission did receive on April 25th of 2002 a letter from Easton Telecom Services requesting to withdraw its certificate of authority, so it does not have a COA, and staff recommends denying this request for an approval of a resale agreement.
Would there be any reason that we'd grant a withdrawal as opposed to deny? Is there any difference?
No. I think the end result's probably the same.
Yeah, that what Kara just read there is their request to withdraw their COA.
Oh, a number of years ago. Gotcha.
That was in 2002, okay, not this particular filing.
Gotcha, perfect. Perfect. Any questions? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Motion to deny and TC09-081, motion to deny the resale agreement.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. With that, we'll take up telecom item number two, which does deal with an interconnection agreement between Quest and Matrix Telecom. I don't see either of the parties present. Staff comments?
Kara Semler again for staff. And this agreement actually was on the last agenda, and it was my mistake to put it on this agenda again, so I apologize, but no action need be taken today by the commission.
Perfect. Then unless anyone has some motion anyway, we'll just move past that.
How motion we do have a motion.
Yeah, perfect. Very nice. All right. With that, let's proceed back to the beginning of our agenda, and more appropriately, I guess, the beginning of our addendum. Natural gas, item number NG09-001, does deal with MDU's conservation program. And the questions for the commission today are, shall it approve the proposed tariff sheets to extend the current gas conservation programs through October 31st? And also, shall the commission take that action with less than 30 days' notice? MDU?
Thank you, Chairman. Tammy Eberle with MDU. The filing before you is just that. We're working with staff and find that we need a little bit more time to finalize our proposal with regard to the conservation programs for the starting calendar year 2010, and ask that you approve the tariff before you, which provides a continuation of the existing program through October 31, and that will provide us the time to get a filing before you and take action in October. So, and we, because the filing was made with less than 30 days' notice, we've also included that required request for approval less than 30 days' notice. There is no change in rates with this extension. It's simply extending the existing tariff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eberle. Commission staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for Commission staff. We're very close. I think we probably could have had something in this week, but we wanted to give the commissioners a chance to really look through this stuff. We've got a couple new ideas and thought we'd give you a little more time. So I think you'll probably see a filing in the next week or so. And recommend approval.
Thank you. Any questions? And Mr. Rounds, this essentially just does, I mean, extends it in exactly the same way we extended it to September last time this was on the agenda. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, is there any action? I would move that the commission approve the proposed tariff sheets and extend the current conservation programs through October 31st, and that we do so with less than 30 days' notice. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much. With that, we will move toward, go back to our regular agenda, pipeline safety, item number one. It does deal with investigation of the natural gas incident on MDU's system. And the question before the commission today, the first one we'll take up, is shall the commission grant intervention to Midwest Clutch and Midwest Family as the movements? Do either of those parties have anything to add other than what they've filed with the commission?
Mr. Chairman, this is Terry Westergaard on the motion or petition to intervene. I do not have anything to add beyond my petition.
Thanks very much, and you'll stand by for questions, I'm sure.
Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Westergaard. With that, MDU has filed a resistance to granting party status. MDU?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Montana Dakota in this matter. We have filed a written opposition to the intervention, and I think it's pretty clear what our position is from that. But just to summarize, we believe that this is a docket that started, that has been commenced under the Pipeline Safety Act. And the Pipeline Safety Act clearly is confined to the role of the commission in enforcing federal safety standards. And there's nothing in that act, and for that matter, there's nothing anywhere else in the commission statutes that I can find that gives the commission jurisdiction to actually adjudicate the claims between the two parties. And so we believe that this intervention is not well taken the petition is not well taken because the commission does not have the jurisdiction to give them what they want. As is stated in our filing, right now the pipe is in the joint custody of MDU on the one hand and the petitioner on the other hand. I mean, and so the point is that they simply need to get together, work out a protocol for testing the pipe, and go ahead and test it. The commission doesn't even have physical jurisdiction of it, the way I understand the present state of affairs. That's the way it's been explained to me by the people at Montana and Dakota, at least. And so what we're saying is really that this is simply an act that's not necessary, and beyond being unnecessary and additional work for MDU, it also is not called for because of the very character of the way that the pipe is being held in joint custody of the two parties. So we think that the petition should be denied. It's that simple.
Thank you. Commission staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kara Semler, again, for commission staff. Staff agrees with the pipeline safety role, with Mr. Gertis's description of the pipeline safety role that the commission does play. However, we do believe that the petition to intervene should be granted. The party who petitioned does represent an individual whose business was destroyed, and they certainly have an interest in any pipeline safety action that the commission may take. So we recommend granting the petition to intervene. And did you want to jump into the second part? I'll withhold comments then until decisions made on petition to intervene.
Great. Thanks very much. Questions? You know, Mr. Gertis, I mean, I look at the second question on the agenda today, and I take with that your comment that the pipe is currently in joint custody. I mean, that just seems to me to be one very specific and very narrow instance where maybe Midwest Clutch and Midwest Family might want to have party status. I mean, are you really arguing that they don't have an interest in this proceeding that's unique?
Yes, we're arguing that in this proceeding, the function that it's performed under the pipeline safety statutes is between the commission and MDU. As far as the claims for damages that Midwest Clutch has, this commission has no jurisdiction at all to address that. That's more properly addressed either in federal court or in South Dakota Circuit Court. Going back to my experience litigating products liability cases, when such a lawsuit is started, if in fact Midwest Clutch is going to commence an action against MDU, the court has ample tools in the federal, in the, either the federal or state rules of civil procedure, to provide a mechanism for handling evidence of this type. Typically, the court will order that a protocol be adopted and that set parameters as far as the conditions under which the parties will test the pipe in order to not only preserve the evidence but also to make sure that the tests that are conducted are safe to both sides. And none of that, under my understanding of the jurisdiction of the commission, is within the jurisdiction of the commission. So what this really asks for is something that really doesn't do anything. That would be what our position would be.
Other questions? Hearing none, is there any action?
Well, I do think that the Midwest Family, the insurer, and I do think that the Midwest Clutch, the business that was actually harmed, does have an interest in what these, the outcome of this docket. So I'll motion PS09001 that the commission grant intervention to Midwest Clutch and Midwest Family, the insurer.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Any discussion on the motion?
I just have a question. I'm trying to parse the fineness of this, so I'm going to look to our counsel for a second. I understand what you said. The challenge I'm having is they obviously have an interest, but does that bring them into a position where they would want to participate in intervention, but where it would be appropriate for them to be an intervener? Ms. Semler?
Yep. I believe it does. I believe they have an interest in monitoring and giving their two cents if they so choose regarding staff's recommendations or commission action regarding pipeline safety. Our jurisdiction is limited to pipeline safety, but I believe they do have an appropriate interest in.
Wouldn't they still be able to participate without being an intervener to the extent that necessary?
I don't believe they would. They could certainly make public comments. You know, our meetings are all open. But as a party with party standing, intervention's a necessary step.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johns votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. We'll take up the second question, which is, shall the commission grant the request to test the line? Midwest Clutch, Midwest Family.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, under SDCL 49-34B-26 and 49-34B-27, I think it's appropriate to have the commission grant the request for testing. The first sentence of 49-34B-26 indicates that no pipeline operator or its employee or agent may dispose of, destroy, or alter any part of a pipeline that is involved in emergency release until approval is granted by the commission. That's not technically what we're dealing with here. That would be a situation where if MDU came in and requested the testing. But I think a similar rationale applies, that we need to get approval from the commission to do the testing. And even though we're coming in as an intervener to do the testing, we've invited and would like MDU to participate. We can all establish the protocol for the testing and agree on that protocol. The further power, I think, of the commission to allow the testing is under 49-34B-27, which allows the commission to conduct investigations, make reports, conduct research and testing. I think the commission has the authority and the power to basically oversee the testing of the pipeline in this case. We've made a request for specific testing at a lab that has been recommended to my client, but we're open to any other testing that the commissioner or the commission requests. So based on that, I think it is appropriate to allow the testing and for the commission to approve the testing.
Thank you, Mr. Westergaard. MDU.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Well, for the same reasons that we oppose the intervention, we also oppose the testing because, again, the commission doesn't even have the pipe. It's in the possession of the parties. The commission staff has already done their investigation. The pipe's out of the ground, and it's in a warehouse someplace. It's just a futile act. The jurisdiction over that lies with a court if there is a claim filed. And if not, why would you be going through this in the first instance? And so we would submit that, again, this is just simply busy work, for lack of a better term.
Commission staff.
Kara Semler for staff. Staff does agree that statutorily the commission may not have authority to release this pipe to a third party for the third party to test it, as that statute that was cited by Mr. Westergaard does indicate that the pipeline operator may come to the commission to ask. However, 34B27, also cited, does give the commission authority to conduct tests should it believe that such tests need to be done. And the pipe segment at issue hasn't been tested to the extent that it's now being requested. So as Mr. Gerdes asserted, the parties are willing to come to a testing protocol agreement, and staff recommends that the parties do draft and submit testing protocol that hopefully is agreed to by all parties, and that from there the testing does take place. And in the event the parties can't come to an agreement, the commission would again have a decision before it whether or not it believes testing should be ordered.
questions. Ms. Semler, given the statutes you cited, does it make the most sense for such testing to be undertaken under the aegis of the commission? I mean, the commission may test. So certainly the commission, under what you propose, the commission would be, I mean, a lead party in these negotiations about the protocols?
Certainly. I do think it's most productive for the parties themselves to compose the protocol. I don't think it's appropriate for staff to be involved in that process, but certainly the commission could order such testing be done.
Other questions?
Ms. Semler, when we granted intervention, wouldn't that give the third party access to all the testing that's already been done?
Yes. And Mr. Solem has more information on this particular segment of pipe and why additional testing may need to be done on it, if you'd like for him to expand.
Yes, please.
This is Nathan Solem with staff. Currently, the data that NDU has indicates that this may possibly be an inside non-jurisdictional leak. Midwest is indicating that additional testing is necessary, and it may help define whether or not it is a jurisdictional leak, and that is pertinent to staff's role in investigating this incident, so additional testing is recommended by staff for that reason.
So I agree with Mr. Gerdes' statement that I don't think the commission has the jurisdiction to okay a third party to test the pipe, but we do. Are you suggesting that we take over the investigation and test the pipe? Is that what you're suggesting?
An interpretation of 192.617 under the Federal Pipeline Safety Code indicates that it's primarily the operator's responsibility to do this testing. So staff would prefer that the operator and the intervener work together to do this, but since we have the authority under the statutes previously cited, we certainly can do that.
So in the event that the two parties don't work together, then we may have to step up our efforts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment? My understanding is that non-jurisdictional pipe that Mr. Solem is talking about was an inside pipe owned by the property owner and is not part of the pipeline jurisdiction of the commission. Am I wrong on that?
No, that's not jurisdictional. You're correct.
Yeah, okay.
But so, we are still interested in the results of the testing to help determine whether or not to confirm whether or not it is jurisdictional. Whether that is the cause of the leak or not.
I don't know how the testing determines whether it's jurisdictional if it was part of the hookup of the furnace to the outside pipeline. It seems to me that that's owned by the property owner, but I may be wrong.
It is owned by the property owner. It is non-jurisdictional. But the testing is to help determine whether that was the cause of the explosion or not, and if it determines it was not the cause of the explosion, then there is an opening that possibly there is jurisdictional pipe that is the cause of the explosion.
Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, it should be tested. There's a bit of a question I have in my mind. I know that occasionally when these pipes are tested that they destroy the pipe. So once it's tested, you don't bring it to another company and have it retested. So there's concern here that it be done correctly the first time, not only from the standpoint that we want it done correctly, but we can't do it a second time. Is that correct, Mr. Solem?
That is correct.
So isn't there a vested interest in the property owner to have the test come out in, or am I mistaken, in one particular fashion as opposed to another?
There is that possibility.
So my concern is who should test the pipe so that we are certain that there's no conflict, and the resolution of that if it is within, I don't know whether it's within the jurisdiction of the PUC or not. However, it certainly makes sense that the parties that have vested interest in the outcome of the pipe not be the ones who go through the testing of the pipe.
I think that concern can be mitigated if a protocol is jointly agreed to by the intervener and the operator, and the testing lab selected is jointly agreed to, then I think the mitigation of that issue is taken care of.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think Commissioner Hansen and Mr. Solem, I think, hit on exactly where I'm headed to, which is maybe rather than taking action on this question today, let's just instruct the parties that we do expect that a protocol be developed and that all the parties would agree to, and that they would move forward jointly to test that pipe. But I do think state statute makes it clear the commission does have the authority to test, but, you know, as staff has mentioned, it's probably better if we don't exercise that authority directly and instead the parties just work on it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That makes sense to me. This is Terry Westergaard.
First, Commissioner Colbeck, then Mr. Gerdes. Any comments?
I was just wondering if it would be better to deny the motion to test the pipe, because regardless of whether they come together or whether they can come to an agreement on how to test the pipe, I don't think we have the jurisdiction to give a third party the authority to do that.
This is just me talking. I don't know that that's entirely clear. I mean, my plain reading of the statute, you know, says the commission has the authority to conduct that testing. How much latitude the commission has, I mean, certainly we can delegate the actual physical testing to a professional tester. To me, it's not entirely clear from the four corners how much latitude the commission has in determining who's calling the shots and who's, I mean, this is just me, one person. I prefer not to rule on that because I think I'd want to think about that a little further and sort of keep this open in case they aren't able to reach an agreement. But certainly you may be able to change my mind, or a staff or council or anybody else thinks it'd be better to clean this up, then I'd be fine moving forward, I mean, moving on it.
Well, and I'm not debating that we have the ability to test the pipe. I think what the question asks is, if we grant the interveners the opportunity to control the test of the pipe.
Sure.
And I guess that's maybe where staff can help me out. If that's what the question asks and that's where that question is going, I'd rather put that to rest right now and then have them work on trying to come out with a solution. But if that question can be answered today, I'd like to get rid of that.
And I'll look to Mr. Smith for some help too, but this is Kara Semler. I don't think our statutes give the commission the authority to give the pipe to the third party, the non-pipeline operator, and tell them to go for it. But I do think our statutes give you the authority to order a commission test be done. So I just think it's in the best interest of the parties if they can agree to a testing, if they can agree to a protocol, and if not, then the commission can conduct a test.
Well, and I agree to that. I guess maybe my question should be to Mr. Westerbrook. I'm sorry, Mr. Westergaard, are you asking to have possession of this pipe and test it? Is that what the question you're asking today?
We are not.
Okay.
Originally, we were asking just for approval from the commission, but I'm not so sure that statute applies since we're not the operator. What we're asking... Well, I guess essentially we are asking for approval, but we're not asking for control of the testing. We consent to establish a protocol with MDU to do the testing. We have no intent just to take possession of the pipe and do testing ourselves. I don't think that does anyone any good.
Okay, well, that puts my mind at ease then, that this question is, I think that I was maybe misinterpreting what the question was stating. So I would have no problem leaving that question open then.
Well, and I don't know. It may not make sense to sort of hold this in abeyance. You know, Mr. Smith, any guidance? Go ahead. You can take a moment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't know that Commissioner Colbeck was misinterpreting it. I'm uncomfortable just the way it reads. It certainly implies that we are giving them that authority. So I'm uncomfortable and just wanted to, as long as they were conferring, give my two cents on that area.
And, of course, the commission doesn't have a dichotomy in front of it. I mean, either do what they say or not. I mean, you know, we do the commission does what it wants, not allowable under law. But it may be that it's messier to keep this open-ended. And if that's the case, I certainly don't mind denying the motion and instructing the parties on our own motion to move forward in a different way. But, Mr. Smith, what's cleanest?
Well, I might point to one other section, and maybe Nathan or Mr. Sola or Ms. Semler can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm looking at section 190.203, and to me that appears to apply to the entirety of the chapter. And we went through this same thing with the Northwestern pipe situation over in Mitchell, the exact same provision. And it seems to contemplate, and it's the protocol we ended up following in that case, and we kind of went through this exact same drill where we were here at the commission, and then we followed what that says, and we basically put it back to the operator. And we had interveners in that case as well. And in the end, the parties were able to come up with a professionally developed, mutually acceptable procedure and set of technical protocols for undertaking tests that would be fair and allow a test to take place that wouldn't prejudice the rights of anyone through destruction of pipe without everyone who's concerned about it being involved. And again, our interest, I totally agree with Mr. Gerdes, our interest is just strictly in terms of inspecting with respect to the incident and its relationship to pipeline safety standard compliance. That's our only involvement. It is not our responsibility to get involved in any way adjudicating or implicating adjudication of liability or causation with respect to damages that may have been caused to a company. That's not our role here. But that said, the point I think that Commissioner Hansen made makes a lot of sense, and I think it's what we ended up having to conclude in the Northwestern situation. If you're going to have to do destructive testing, you might only get one bite at that apple, you know, and so we've got to, if there's a reason why staff believes that a test is relevant to our investigation into pipeline safety standard compliance, then there's only one shot at that for everybody, and so we've sort of got to have all these things coordinated. And what I'd point to in the section D of Rule 190.203 is just that procedure that states that we are to give the operator a chance to come up with a mutually acceptable operating, or what does the word say here? A mutually acceptable plan. And it sounds to me like that's just what you're doing. Now, I do want to ask one clarifying question here, if I might, of Mr. Solem. And I'm going to tell you the reason is because it sounded for a bit like we were getting into the domain of thinking we're going to conduct testing on the property owner's pipe. And I don't think in any way, shape, or form we've got authority to do that. Our statutes just give us authority over those pieces of pipe that are subject to our pipeline safety regulation. But
there is currently testing being done on the inside piping, of which we will have access to the results, but the testing that we're talking about is on the jurisdictional piece of main in front of the facility where the corrosion leaks were found that were in our compliance report.
Okay, and I assumed that. I just wanted to make sure because it sort of sounded, like we were talking here about maybe being involved with the owner or the property owner pipe, and that's not our bailiwick here.
I think we've all been driving toward the same target. I've been persuaded that one mechanism is better than another, so I will go ahead and move that the commission deny Midwest Clutch's, Midwest Family's request to test the gas line and instead instruct the parties to jointly develop a protocol for testing and that if they can't agree on a mutually on a testing protocol, that this would come back before the commission. Okay, so Any discussion on the motion? Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. All right. Thanks to everyone.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Yep, thanks, Mr. Westergaard. With that, I think, although we've skipped around a bit, I think the last item up for discussion today is on the addendum, pipeline safety item number one. That is a filing made by the Commission Acting Pipeline Safety Program Manager, and this deals with SDIP and some compliance issues. The question for the Commission today is how shall it proceed? We'll look first to staff.
This is Nathan Solem with staff. At this point in time, I can offer two alternatives for the Commission's consideration. The first one is the purpose of a fine in these instances is to assist in compliance. And in this case, the correction, the short bolts have been corrected and compliance has now been achieved and a fine may not be necessary. But on the other hand, this year during our federal pipeline safety program audit, we were penalized for not closing our compliance items in a timely fashion. And this docket is one example of that. This item was originally supposed to be completed in, I think it was October of 2008. And perhaps assessing a small penalty will demonstrate to the auditor and to the operators that we intend to follow compliance deadlines. As far as the issue whether it's been completed or not, they've stated it's completed. I believe that's the case, and that's not an issue. It's the fine or penalty that's the issue.
SDIP?
We have completed this.
Is your mic on, Mr. Woods?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Okay, let's pull it a little closer, and let's go ahead and restate your name for the record.
Gordon Woods, South Dakota Intrastate Pipeline. I have our personnel has fixed this compliance issue, and it was more of a timing issue with us than anything in getting the job done. So I would ask that it be dismissed, and if not, that's all right, too.
Questions? Go ahead, Commissioner.
I was just going to say, Mr. Solem, are we relatively positive that this will have a positive effect with the federal auditors, or are we just hoping that it will?
I think having that in the record that we've done that will, I can't say for sure, but my feeling based on how they've operated in the past would be that it would.
And what was the severity of when we got dinged? Could you go through that? What was the significance of that?
I don't have a numerical value for you, but the auditor put quite a bit of emphasis on it and suggested that I tell the operators about it, which I did in an email, and that we tighten up on it. And I also talked about it at the pipeline safety seminar that we held in April.
And if we assess this fine, we think that will hopefully bring our record back, or hopefully just send a message that we're doing the best we can. Is that correct?
It will be one step to demonstrate that we're taking action to achieve timely compliance.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Commissioner?
Nathan, excuse me, Mr. Solem, I'm not quite certain on the severity of the ding, as Commissioner Colbeck related. What the auditor wrote the PUC up for dilatoriness?
The audit process, there's a number of points in different categories that you are given with a maximum number for each one. And in that area, on timely compliance issues, we were docked some points because we had a lot of open items that were past the due dates that we had originally established. We currently have almost all of those taken care of, but we from 2008, but it is a continuing issue to impress that compliance with the deadlines that we have stated in the inspection report is necessary.
So was there any fine? Was the PUC fined at all?
We wouldn't be fined, but it will reduce the amount of funds we get in our grant. Those points go towards your funding calculations.
And I'm very uncomfortable with any type of a fine without having to go through the entire process of finding out what reasons there might be for the compliance not taking place more quickly. Could weather have had anything to do with that?
At any particular point in time, yes, but remember this inspection item was first opened in October. There was an extension granted in April. Certainly somewhere in that an extension granted in April with a July 31st deadline, you've gone through all the seasons and weather. Certainly there would have been some opportune time to have done that work.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might have some more, but Commissioner Colbeck.
I have a couple as well. Do you have a quick follow-up, Commissioner?
You had just said that it occurred in October. I think it, from what I read, it occurred in August of 2008. Is that correct?
And I think the compliance deadline was October of 2008, was it not?
Yeah, the compliance, yeah. I think, was in October 31st of 2008, but when you discovered the problem was actually in August of 2008.
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
You know, Mr. Solomon, because the problem was first identified in August of last year, and because there were reminders along the way to get this done, and that it only got done recently, to be honest, I found myself a little surprised with the staff recommendation of only a $50 fine. I sort of feel like, and I'm not talking about SDIP here because I don't know the intricacies of how they run their operation, but I'll talk about the Public Utilities Commission. I mean, I sort of feel like people who aren't diligent on the small things aren't diligent on the big things. And so is it important for the commission to show that we take the small things really important when it comes to something like pipeline safety? I mean, walk me through why a $50 fine you thought was adequate.
We did some extensive research on fines in surrounding states when we were putting together the pipeline safety rules that are currently going before Legislative Research Council next week. And pipeline fines generally are fairly small. And this is a very small one. It's not a real serious offense as far as the safety item. It was to demonstrate that we're going to take action on these things. But if the commission feels a larger fine is appropriate, staff certainly has no objection with that.
Can you provide me some context? I mean, what is the range of allowable fines? You mentioned that this was not a violation that had a real strong safety component. I mean, sort of put that in context for me as well. And then finally, help me understand the context a little bit more about the range of. You mentioned they are generally small from surrounding areas, so put those three things in context.
Okay, a lot of the fines that are of the non-serious category will probably ranged from $100 to $750, something like that, in surrounding states, just depending on what it is. And as far as seriousness goes, I mean, obviously these have. Those bolts had been in there a long time that way, and there was no safety hazard, but it is not according to code. And we had been trained to check for that, so it's something that needs to be corrected, but it's not probably an immediate safety hazard. So that helped indicate to me the fine should be lower.
For both Mr. Woods and Mr. Solomon, I mean, are there secondary effects or unintended consequences that come from a fine being levied against an operator? I mean, I know if I get a speeding ticket, it's not the speeding ticket that costs me money. You know, it's the insurance over the next 3 years. So anything like that?
Well, Excuse me. Well, I'd say on our behalf, our insurance company does look at these things. We've had a 17-year record of, you know, clean record, no violations at all. And as I said earlier, this was a timing issue for us. We wait until the hottest part of the summer to shut our pipeline down because we actually do have to shut it down, stop the flow of gas in the pipeline. We had to do that to make this correction. Unfortunately, it wasn't very hot this summer. We waited too long. So that's on us.
Yeah, and I will echo what Mr. Solem said. I mean, we're talking about, 12 months here almost. I mean, if it was identified in August, last August was reasonably hot. Could have been done then, but I also understand what you're saying. Other questions, comments?
Mr. Woods, is there any, you mentioned insurance, is there any other thing that this is going to affect your day-to-day business?
No.
Thanks.
Well, I'm looking to my colleagues for some advice. I mean, I'm sort of torn here on one hand with something like this where clearly Mr. Solem, I have incredible respect for him and his team, and so my default position is to be deferential to them on what an appropriate fine is. On the other hand, though, I can't shake the fact that any year-long out of compliance, nearly year-long out of compliance with code when you've been reminded a couple of times is probably worth more than $50, but I'll look to you guys and any thoughts you have.
I think it'd be, I don't wish anyone to think of me as being facetious, but I would, I look at something of this nature and having dealt with EPA and a number of other federal bureaucracies and the challenges that you work with, a lot of it's just simply black and white with them. And I would assume it is a challenge when you're operating a gas line. You don't have, it's not like a rail system where you can just stop and start it, or you can put the trains over on a siding while you're doing some work. You have a situation where there are people depending upon businesses and entire communities depending upon that flow of gas. And so it is a challenge, especially when you're looking at a wintertime period and the flow has to be constant. So I empathize to an extent with that. And if we're going to level a fine, I would think a dollar would be suffice. We're saying that don't do it. $50, I guess, is close to that $1 mark, and I think that's what was being recommended to us is this is not a safety item. This is not a huge item. This is a situation where there's a bit of a bureaucracy that is being dealt with, and simply because they dinged us on paperwork doesn't mean that incongruity should be passed on necessarily to the operator of the pipe. Okay, there's some dilatoriness on accomplishing what should have been. Perhaps there was that time frame right in August where you might have been able to get it done. At the same time, you anticipate it's going to be hotter in another period of time, so you say, let's get through the winter, then we'll get this thing taken care of. You missed it because it's cool and the gas is still flowing. It's easy to look back on something of that nature and try and ascertain what to take care of. But I think we've got a great recommendation from our staff here, and it's either from my position, it's either $50 or $1.
I would be reticent to dismiss the fine if it was 3 months, 6 months. But I just the timeline, the amount of time it took to get repaired, I think that's just something that we need to preserve the respect of our pipeline inspectors, and I don't think an overabsorbent amount is going to fix the problem either. I think it's just something that we need to keep face with the federal standards, keep our funding in action, and I feel bad for Mr. Woods that he didn't get the time to repair it, and I understand that coming from the repair business, but 12 months is a long time. Obviously, you have to take at least six of those out for cold weather, so 6 months of active time to be able to prepare that. I think Mr. Solem's done the research on the fine, so I feel $50 is appropriate.
Other questions or comments? If not, is there an action? Is there any action?
I think the correct motion in PS09-004 would be to deny the request that the commission not assess a fine. I'll make that motion.
We also need a commission action to it. I mean, to actually find it needs to be a commission action. So if I could make a friendly suggestion, maybe the motion could be to assess a $50 fine against the operator.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess I was going by the wording that the South Dakota pipeline. Is that the correct? If that's the correct way to handle it, that's fine.
Well, we sort of have kind of the pending motion in my mind, and somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, is that staff has asked us to do a $50 fine. In response to that request, SDIP has filed asking that we not. But that's sort of the initial, the moving question for today is should we assess the $50 fine?
Sure. Okay.
Comments on the motion?
I think both of them together is...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we need both of them together, but it's Commissioner Beck who's making the motion. So if you want them both, let's take them both.
How about I withdraw my motion and we'll go with yours? Because you made a motion to accept the $50 fine, correct?
Well, let's have it be your motion because you're willing to work with it. So you do what you want. I think we're going to be fine either way.
I'll amend my motion to state that the commission adopts the recommendation of staff and that a $50 fine be assessed.
Okay. Thanks. Other comments on the motion? Hanson?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
I'll vote aye as well. So, motion carries 3-0. Is there, we have announcements on the agenda. Other than that, I don't think there's any other business to come before the commission. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion has been made. Hanson?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much.